Hi, everyone. Welcome to episode 86 of Josh Nason's Punch-Out here on WrestlingObserver.com. I am Josh Nason, writer, editor, and podcaster for the website. Hope you guys are having a great holiday week, had some good downtime, and are looking forward to New Year's Eve coming up here in, what, a couple days? Imagine that. Off to 2018 and bidding farewell to an interesting, newsworthy, and sometimes sad 2017 in a lot of ways. And I know a lot of people will be very happy to see this past year move on and are looking forward to what's ahead. But there's obviously a lot of good stuff happened last year as well, and everything's not all bad when it comes to news of the day. Obviously, a lot of births and weddings and fun matches, fun fights, all that good stuff. So we're going to get to that. We are diverging away from our best of, or our year in review, rather, in MMA. We'll be getting back to that next week and wrapping that up. However, I had the opportunity to talk to old friend of the show, John Pollock, and John and I chatted about post-wrestling. I was very interested in that, officially launching on Christmas Eve. So John and I talked for probably about 40 or so minutes on that, and then talked a little bit about UFC, the UFC's big pay-per-view. Year-end pay-per-view coming up this weekend. Some of the things to look forward to, and then some of the issues surrounding the show due to injuries and the like. So this is a really good conversation if you're kind of trying to understand a little bit more about the rationale about why post-wrestling exists, and maybe why John and Wei Ting didn't go to an existing brand or anything like that. Decision to go with paid content versus just the free model, why they're kind of on the, straddling that line, and whether the law is going to come back, and it's just all this other stuff. So we hit and I, and also how they're going to cover MMA. We talked about a ton of topics on here. So if you're into kind of that, understanding what the rationale is behind that, I think you guys are going to really enjoy this conversation. So without further ado, let's get right to it with yours truly and John Pollock of Post Wrestling right now. Well, when we last talked to our guest this week, almost a year ago, I'd say, earlier this year, he was gainfully employed by the Fight Network, on TV all the time. Guy was riding around in several Mercedes-Benzes per day, just throw keys out to people. It was like Conor McGregor of Toronto, really. And then it happened. Late October happened, and John Pollock, our guest this week, was out on the street. But however, he has rebounded strong, stronger than ever, and has launched Post Wrestling. He and Wei Ting, Wei Ting. Post Wrestling, live this week. Patreon blowing up. This guy has been the talk of the wrestling industry for a few weeks now, the wrestling media industry. And I was able to book him still on this show. Can you guys believe that? John Pollock, welcome back to Josh Nason's Punch-Out, man. What's happening?
What a wonderful introduction. We thought this guy was dead, but he's showing signs of life over the last week, and we're here to have him on. Thank you, Josh. It's great to be here.
I mean, look, you could have gone to, I had this list, and that also, that intro is completely off the top of my head. I have nothing written down. I did, however, have a tab open here of the largest employers in Toronto, which you could have gone to work for, which include George Weston Limited, Onyx Corporation.
Onyx?
Onyx,
I think.
Yep.
Okay.
Not the rap group Onyx from the 90s, but a different type. Hudson's Bay.
I don't know how much Hudson's Bay was hiring, but I'm glad they're amongst Canada's elite when you were doing your research.
Yep, Royal Bank of Canada, Sears, Canadian Tire Corp,
Sears is a disaster. So I don't know if they necessarily would have been opening their doors if I chose to maybe present them with a new take on the Sears catalog.
My favorite would have been if you had gone to work for Canadian Tire Corporation.
Oh, well, Canadian Tire is just, it's so much more than the name entails. And I imagine a lot of you listening are Americans that maybe are not familiar with the Canadian Tire franchise that has branched out to just become the be-all, end-all of anything you need in your home and extending themselves to even naming rights of arenas. So Canadian Tire, a juggernaut here in our home and native land.
I will send this off to them when you have your interview with them.
Yeah, it's always, you always keep as many doors open as possible. Josh, you know that.
Certainly do. So let's talk about Post. So for those that are listening to this, we'll do about half on Post, half on UFC preview for this week, and send out some wrestling fans only are kind of wanted to check it out and see what's going on with Post. So We'll kind of go back a little bit because I don't want to basically regurgitate everything you talked about in the first hour or so of your the Christmas show, which I would urge people to check out. 4.5 hours. I am an hour or so into it. In the Christmas rumble, as it were. But the first hour or so, 45 minutes or so, you did a really good job kind of talking about kind of how you got to this point and also a lot of videos and things like that. So you and I actually had had some beers and some burgers a couple months ago, early October. And in Toronto when I was up there for a work conference. And nothing had happened at that point, but you know, we were kind of talking a little bit about ideas and what was kind of happening out there. And you had mentioned that there was some interest in maybe doing this at some point. And then a few weeks later, it was a big surprise when Fight Network let you guys go. Was it something you kind of felt was coming for a long time, or was it just something that just kind of happened and was like, all right, it's a big surprise at this point?
No, definitely not a surprise. Didn't know that day it was happening. Didn't know exactly the proximity of when it would be happening. But I think you'd have to be crazy to have been in my position and not seen the writing on the wall when there was an initial series of cuts back in March, which really gutted the news division and original programming that was being done, save for the law. And that was essentially my job from March till October, was kind of just keeping on with all the law, all the shows, the website, all of that, to just continue with that. But I mean, I'm looking around and all the people that I was doing programming with and news with, those people were all gone. So I had no reservations in my mind that the next round, I mean, I'm probably on deck for that next round. And it came in October, and I was not caught off guard at all, really, by it. And during that time, it was a lot of time to think about, you know, if this happens, what is that next step? And myself and Wei, we have talked about for a long time the idea of having something of our own, which is just, it's just a different animal when it's something you own, you control. And that was something we were adamant on doing instantly. I would say within an hour of hearing about our releases that we were ready to just go full head on into this venture.
So take me back to that day then. So do you hear about it in a phone call? Do you go in the office? What happened?
No, I was in the office that day and just pulled in and just informed that, like, this is the situation and we're sorry, but this is a cut we've got to make. And it was a very pleasant conversation in terms of a dismissal is going to be. It was just, hey, thanks. It was great, and ready to move on. And that was it. It was a very short conversation. Took off, and that was it. So, it was pretty matter of fact. I was in the office. It was in the morning, so I was just starting on this big audio thing I wanted to do, because that was the UFC 217 fight week. So I was going to be doing this this audio thing for the MMA report that week on George St. Pierre. Mm-hmm. So I was kind of happy it happened in the morning and not after I spent a whole day starting this thing that would never air. So the timing was great.
Wow. Okay. So assume work computer, do you have like separate ones, or are you basically like computerless at this point? I was thinking, I've been through this before. So I've kind of like, I'm trying to think of the things like, you know, did you have some sort of cushion with some kind of severance? Did you have to get a brand new computer? Did you have to do that? Like, basically, like, how did life change for you in that immediate moment?
Oh, not really. I mean, I work on my own computer, so that was not. It was really, honestly, like a pretty seamless day in terms of just took what I wanted out of my office and left, and that was it. That was it. Went home and. Just kind of moved on to what do I do now? I kind of took that week to kind of take my foot off the gas, so to speak, and kind of just enjoy a week to not have to think about every single show I've got to produce, every news story I've got to chase after. It was just, I just decided to take that week kind of to myself, and it was a tremendous week. It was honestly really enjoyable week to just have that week where I didn't have that pressure on myself, which there was a lot. And maybe people, you know, they would stop by the law site every now and then. Maybe they were listening daily, but I think most people could agree, like, we pumped out a lot, and a majority of that kind of fell on me. And it was, weekly shows, almost daily shows that we were doing. And it was a lot of time put into it. And it was a ton of juggling when it came to time management.
So did Way find out the same day, correct?
Yeah. Everyone was notified that day.
Okay. So at what point do you and Way first kind of start talking about, all right, we should figure out to do something? Is that kind of like, we'll give it this a few weeks and just kind of let dust settle and give it that week or so? Or did you, were you like immediately like, all right, we need to start doing something like sooner than later?
Oh yeah, we started that day. I would say, I think we met up, you know, within a few hours of the news, and both were adamant that we wanted to do a show that night. And that was kind of our decision that, yeah, we could go dark for a number of weeks until we have something concrete, but neither of us was really crazy about that option. And we just said, you know, it's the consistency has always been a big thing for us. So it was just, well, let's do a show that night. People do want to hear from us. And that was, the ball was already rolling at that point that, okay, we need a stopgap to get us from, to serve as a bridge until we find out what is our next option. And we didn't know exactly what it was going to look like, but we had a large picture idea of somewhere that would be ours. And that's kind of where it started. It was that day within a couple of hours.
What did your wife say?
Oh, she was, I mean, very encouraging towards the idea of having something of our own. I mean, it was something like that I've always wanted. There's a certain level that, you know, the Fight Network and the law, it allowed me a lot of great opportunities, but there was a certain point where you reach where it's, well, what's the next step? And is the next step in here or is it outside? And I mean, I've looked at this option that the biggest area for growth would be on the outside as opposed to in. So, I was encouraged heavily to push forward with this. So, that part meant a lot. And yeah, it was never a debate on launching this thing and going ahead with this. It was the natural progression of where both of us wanted to go. And that was kind of from day one, if we're going to call October 30th, day one, that was the plan.
All right. So you guys know you want to do something. Obviously you had this, and you and I talked about this before, that you had this foundation of both foundation of Twitter followers. You had established like library of content and goodwill built up and all that as well. So you already kind of hit the ground running, which a lot of people, you know, that try to do stuff on their own don't really have. So you kind of have this foundation. So then it was a case of you guys knew you were going to do podcasts or do, you know, audio and then video and things like that. So where does it kind of pick up of as far as like, all right, we want to do a website kind of to support all this as well. Kind of what was the next steps in terms of kind of like figuring out what's the plan going to be for the actual website presence?
Yeah, I would say that was like right at the beginning was we knew we needed a central landing spot and having one of our own. You look at just where we were at that time, it was, well, do we go somewhere else? Do we try this on our own? Those were the options. And both of us were kind of thinking that if we don't try this now, we'll always regret it because this is what both of us have always wanted to do was run something on our own and either succeed or fall on our faces. But trying it, at least trying to see if there is an appetite for our own home. And I think maybe some of that is that you work for a major company and sometimes it's a business decision. It has nothing to do with the work that you're providing and the people you're attracting to your product. Sometimes it's just a very X's and O's decision and you're kind of on the short end of the stick when it comes to a decision like that. And I had always wanted to be in a position where I could at least control where I'm going to be going and not just simply being the, you know, sorry, there's not a spot here for you any longer. I wanted to go and just create our space that we could just work within. And hopefully there would be enough people that would be interested in that kind of a thing that myself and Way could run. So that was kind of the decision from the beginning was we want to push to have this website. And I would say that was right at the beginning was how do we build a site? How do we build up this network? It was all just kind of just going to square one. How do you build this thing from How do we get a site up and running? How do we get a podcast network in place? How do we do all of these different things? How do we run a company on our own, the two of us? So it was definitely, you know, trying times to just try and figure this out. But at the same time, really exciting because you're building something of your own and you're learning new things every day. These past 2 months have been, I can't even properly quantify what they have meant and just in terms of what we've learned in these 2 months. So that's kind of been the outline of the 2 months, was just learning from scratch of how to get to where we are now.
Yeah. So I imagine that, you know, given your connections in the business and you know, obviously people know you guys so well, everyone seems to have a podcast network now. I'm sure you guys probably got hit up from a lot of different sources immediately saying, hey, just come on. You can do your show for us and we'll figure out, you know, if it's a revenue split or something like that. And I know you had mentioned that, obviously you wanted to have something for your own, you could control it and so on, but I imagine you guys probably got a few interesting, leads and interest from, some interesting parties, right?
Yeah. I mean, that was certainly a reassuring element to that week, because no matter what, you don't know what the future is going to hold. And I was lucky enough that I heard from a number of different outlets about interest and kind of having open doors. And I'm definitely, I have a ton of gratitude for those people that reached out, who I'd just rather not name and just keep private. But it was reassuring to know that there was that kind of an interest, and that kind of gave us the spark that, well, there's interest here at this level for us. There was certainly an overwhelming response to our releases, and we just tried to stay grounded in the whole thing. It's like, the first week, of course, there's going to be a lot of outpouring. There's going to be a lot of focus on us. But what is this going to look like in 3 weeks? We want to try and hopefully take these people and direct them to something new. And hopefully many of them follow us. And that's when we kind of doubled down. And we didn't know if, you know, maybe this site, maybe this idea we have, maybe it's a hobby. Maybe it's just a part-time thing. And we're going to have to look at other places. I mean, it was, neither of us wanted to commit to anything immediately because we just didn't know what this was going to be. And I felt both of us, we owed it to ourselves to at least see it out and see what is the response going to be. The worst it could be is nobody signs up for this. Nobody has any interest. And then that's a pretty clear answer that this is not viable, but at least we know. And that's kind of what pushed us for those 2 months.
So then it comes to the decision, which is always an interesting one in today's environment. And I think when it comes to be paid content or not. So you guys are kind of riding the line with that because you have a lot of free stuff. And again, I invite people to go back and listen to your Christmas show for kind of, you know, some of the, you really explain this in a little bit of detail with the different tiers and so on. But I'm interested in, like, okay, so you have this thing of we have the free stuff to kind of hook people in. We've been doing this free forever, kind of like the almost like Bellator and Spike TV, right? Where you have free shows, and then all of a sudden it's like, okay, you got to pay for this. And Patreon, sure. Patreon's obviously a little bit different than like our site, for example, which is subscriber based, and you get access to all this different stuff. Where you're offering a lot of free stuff, but also paid stuff and different unique opportunities and so on. Tell me about kind of how you guys came to that decision. Also, how'd you come to figure out the tiers and what to ask for and all that?
It was very involved. What people can see as the end result now, which is our Patreon that we've called the Post Wrestling Cafe. Yes. That was one of the most complicated strategies that the two of us just spend hours and hours coming up with and trying to get a good sense of, is this enough value? Is there enough of an audience that's willing to pay for this? And it was constantly just changing so many different elements, reaching out to a lot of people that we respect just to get some feedback on, stating, hey, just tear this apart for us. Tell us what is missing here. What you as a consumer would think about this, not having any kind of relationship with us. There was a lot of that, and just having to also rely on our instincts as well of just kind of having something that we feel satisfied with. But going back to your first question about the paid content, yeah, it was something that I was concerned with because our shows have been free for so long. And I've always heard the discussion and the philosophy that once something is free, it's very hard to change that into paid content. That's a very tough move. I think that we're doing it at the right time. I think as well, our audience that we've grown, that our regular listeners, I think they have a pretty good grasp of what happened here, that, you know, we were working for this one place and now we're not there. And we're doing our best to keep as much as we can free, because I think that's so important to keep a significant part of your content free. Because if you put it all behind a paywall, you're never going to grow it. It's going to be so much more difficult that I never wanted to just separate and say, well, you've got to be able to contribute this much for entry. It's like, I value anybody that's going to download our show. It's like, not everybody has that kind of income to support a wrestling show for X amount of dollars a month. So it's keeping it inclusive in that way as well. So we kept the core shows free, that being our Raw and SmackDown reviews, while we put our retro review show, Rewind, away, along with bonus shows that we're doing one a week of. That is part of the Patreon element. So that's what we kind of saw as our balance. And with Patreon, and we've studied about every possible Patreon you can envision, like line by line of just what has worked, what has not worked, and getting the sense that for a lot of the people that support a Patreon, it's certainly you want that value, but a common theme is the amount of people that they want to support the show. They want to keep it going. They have an attachment to the people, and it's almost like it's bonus that you may get a piece of merchandise, or you get an extra show a week. And it seems like that is a philosophy that the best Patreon outlets kind of have succeeded with, is just creating that relationship with their audience, and they want to support you. So the whole decision, we have the four tiers starting at $6, and then they top out at 50. And you can see the selections at patreon.com/postwrestling. And the response has been incredible, but it's one that we agonized over. And then when we thought we had it finalized, one of us would just have a change and say, you know what, I think this has to change here. And then we'd be back to square one. And it was just hours and hours of debating where everything goes and what to include, and also what not to include. I think people just want a clean presentation and not to be overcomplicated and a list of 15 different things you're going to offer that just seem overwhelming. I feel that you want something that's easily digestible. If you are looking for a Patreon, that you feel the need to subscribe to and have that kind of connection to a show.
Yep, I would agree. And you hit on something, and this is something I think about constantly, and we talk about with our group on our internal Slack channel. We were talking about you guys the other day, and then we were talking about we're kind of looking at some other Patreons just kind of see who's out there. And then we happen upon Jack and JP's The Lapse Fan, which brings in, I think they have like 250 some odd Patreons, and they have everything public. It's like, I think it was like $2,500 a month, something like that. And it was incredible when it comes to the amount of Patreons and the amount of people that are out there that are willing to contribute towards something very unique and personalities that they like. And I know you guys went over 600 Patreons as of yesterday or 2 days ago. Is that still right? Around over 600?
Yeah.
Yeah. Personalities, I'm fascinated by the paid content world. And I think about with Dave and Brian too. Essentially, it's Patreon, but in a different way. Paid content to me now, especially in the wrestling media game, is really all about personalities and people that you like. And forever, Dave has built up this, and you know this better than anyone, Dave has built up this reputation with this very simple content. There's a newsletter, and then with Brian, there's audio. And these are the two things you get. It's very uncomplicated. And for, you know, $10.99 a month or whatever it is for the year, $9.99 a month, $9.99 a month if you pay for the year. In advance, you know what you get. It's almost like it's not Patreon, but it's very similar. You know what you're going to get with you guys. You know what you're going to get. There's free content. There's this, but really, it's the personalities. Those two guys that really drive the subscriptions for you guys. It's you guys are driving this. People want, they like you guys, and with you know, with Jack and JP, the same thing. They like those guys, and with other people, it's really, it is. And I think about this with other journalists, and you and I were talking about this a little bit before, was this industry, like, with so many layoffs and things like that, who could go out on their own and basically run their own ship and make enough money where they're going to be able to earn a living, and what can they give back, and what's the expectation there? It is so fascinating, because especially in wrestling and MMA media, I think there's a handful of people that could probably pull this off, and I think you guys are definitely one of the, in that group of a handful that really could do this, and I mean, so far so good a couple days in.
Yeah, I mean, it's funny that despite like the 2 months we've been gearing up for this, we never sat down and had a like, man, what do you think we're going to get? Like, what do you think is a reasonable number to shoot for? It was kind of just, you know, I'm just sometimes a pessimist by nature. So I'm just thinking like what's the worst that could happen? The worst is that nobody signs up. And that tells me that, A, we really botched this rollout, and B, our content is not content people want to pay for. So what happens then? And then it's taking a deeper look at things. What went wrong? We were extremely lucky that that wasn't the case, and there was a tremendous response to people that I just think want to see the show continue. And to me, again, going back to the people that have had the most success on Patreon, I think as well, it's the idea that you want to provide more value than what you're taking in. If like the audience is extremely, they can smell when someone is just in this for like the quick dollar at the end of it. And just this is simply a money stream that they just want to cash out on and make as much money as quick as possible. And that's just not how I think the audience reacts well to when they can sense that. I mean, it's something along the way you really realize the ones that are in this, that have that relationship with their audience where, the audience wants to support you, wants to keep it going. And as I look at the media landscape now, I just feel that more and more you're going to see people's comfort level with supporting things like a Patreon and just supporting the producer of that content directly. I think you're going to see a lot more of that, Josh. I think that that's going to be increasing. That if for instance, one of my favorite podcasts that's under a massive umbrella, if they cancel that show, but you know, there's 1,000 of us that really enjoy this podcast every week, I want to see that show continue. And I hope that there's kind of that space out there that creators can kind of have that direct product delivered to the listener or the viewer. And that somewhat circumvents the current landscape where it's just every other week you're seeing another major company with another set of mass layoffs, that there's a lot of talented people out there. And it's got to make sense. And maybe going directly to the listener, to the viewer, that's a more sustainable model. But as you pointed out, there's not everybody is going to be able to do that and have the viability to make a living off of that.
So, okay. So then you're in this space, and then kind of like, so one of the things you talked about on the show was, now you in your Christmas show is that you bring in other fellow friends and past podcast people that were doing the Law Network and Braden is coming back on, and some of the UK guys are coming back on. So now you're in a position almost like I will say this, like a Bill Simmons, right? So now you have this, he's got this central focus. You guys are the flagship. Now you guys have to decide who else are you bringing on when it comes to help out? What are they going to get for compensation? What type of show is it going to do? So now you are in the editor role, you and Wei, and trying to figure out what shows you're going to bring back and if you want to do anything different, and so on. So I'm interested in kind of that that mindset of when you decided, okay, we need some shoulder programming, so to speak, on your network.
Yeah, well, with the shows, like it's very much just trying to build this into something that is more sustainable and finding a way that we can have as big a lineup as possible with people that we've had relationships with in the past. So when we're looking at different shows like that, I mean, it's something that all those shows, that they will be free shows on the site available for people. They'll have their own podcast feeds specific to the show. And then it's hopefully finding a way where it can, that we can sustain these shows and continue to grow. I mean, it's crazy that we're at this stage. We launched on December 24th and you and I are chatting 5 days later, and it's already changed, I would say, dramatically in the last 5 days. And it's kind of navigating that entire world when it comes to advertising, when it comes to all these other potential elements, because we want to have these people on board and compensated for the work they're doing. At the same time, we're also just, again, we're 5 days into it, and it's pretty much a two-man show right now with myself and Wei. And every decision we make, we have to realize, like, is this a decision we can make right now? Is this something that we have to make phase two? Is this something that's just not sustainable? So it's a lot of those decisions that we're going through day by day.
So how many other shows are there other than your flagship shows, you and Wei?
At the moment, it's me and Wei's shows, which also we have the bonus shows for the Patreon subscribers. And then Keep It 2000, which is Brian Mann and Nate Milton. They're planning to do their show twice a month. And then we have the team of Martin Bushby, Ollie Court, and Benno, who did the British Audio Wrestling show, who will be doing a show once a month. So those are the shows at the moment. And then Braden is currently off. He's actually in Japan as we speak, and he's going to be going to Wrestle Kingdom. And he bought a ticket to go on his trip with no return date. So we don't know when Braden's coming back, and figuring out when we can work him into the mix.
I was listening to that part of the show while I was snowblowing the driveway on Christmas Day. I actually was listening to that. We had a huge snowstorm here, and I was listening to that part and was thinking about, like, how is he, like, did he just take off? Like, what happened? Is he ever going to come back? I was really fascinated by that, because he's one of these guys I think everyone else kind of wants to be like in some aspect of just, I'm just going to take off to a different country and go see wrestling shows and without a care in the world. I think that's something very admirable about that.
Yes. I mean, he is a free spirit. It's very, that is him. And he actually I think he sent out some kind of a tweet about Wrestle Kingdom, and some listeners were responding to him stating that they were staying at an Airbnb in Japan. They were going to Wrestle Kingdom, and they've got a spot for him if he wants to come. So he said, sure. And he booked the ticket, and he went to Australia, and then just transferred over to Japan over the last week. And he's just going to stick around there until he gets bored of Japan, I guess, and then he'll come home.
So at this point, what do you do? What do you do to yourself late Sunday nights, like around 11 o'clock, midnight or so?
Well, this past Sunday was Christmas Eve. Yes. So I spent it with my family. But Sunday nights, to be honest, over the last couple of weeks, every single day has just blurred into the next for me. This has taken up so much of our time that it's every day is just kind of a blur by the end of things. But it was an adjustment, certainly the first couple of weeks, not having the Sunday night show to go to. And I hadn't been doing the Sunday night show throughout the summer after my son was born. But after the news and everything at the end of October, it was very strange for Dan and Jay, who, I mean, it's been all of our Sunday night routine for so long. For Dan going back to the late 90s, and to Jay the same. I didn't come on board till 2003, but it's strange not having a Sunday night where I'm going out.
I noticed a lot in the Facebook comments and some Twitter replies and things like that, Ram stuff I saw when you guys announced kind of what you were doing immediately, and this is, you know, no big surprise here, is that people like, bring back the law, bring back the law. They think this is basically going to be, you know, law 2.0 or, you know, 3.0, whatever you want to call it, with the different iterations throughout the years. Has that been I won't say a hesitation, but I guess how have you got past the going back to the well, the nostalgia well, and just trying to get the band back together and try to do something for paid content? Or has that even been a consideration at all with you guys?
No, I mean, I think that it's certainly the connection is to the people. I think that a lot of listeners out there, they want to hear from these people. And I mean, we've scheduled some shows. This Sunday, we're putting out a best of 2017 show with myself, Way, Dan Lorenzky, and Jason Agnew, with kind of our best of picks for the year. And then the following week, we're going to do our worst of show for 2017. So we're doing those one-offs at the moment. There's no plans in place for a show involving all of us coming back. I mean, there's certainly... It's going to depend a lot on like the opportunities that we find. If there's a need for something, we'll address it. But primarily, the site right now, it's myself in a way doing, I would say, 95% of the content, of the work, and it's where we can have it make sense. That's when we'll add on people. Like, we're not in a position right now where we can just hire all of our friends and suddenly we've got a site and we're dispersing income just all over the place. I mean, this is like, we're being realistic here in this approach. So I like working with all of these people. I think we put together an incredible network at the law of shows that people want to hear, and where it can make sense, we'll have those people on. But it's also like me and Way, it's we're just in a different position. We're trying to make this a full-time job for the two of us, and for the others, I mean, it's like, that's not the intent. I mean, they have their own lives, they have their own jobs, that this can't be their full-time commitment. And I would never expect that out of anyone. It's myself and Way that have to run this 24/7. So it's, you know, as this grows, then that gives you the ability to do more of your ideas that can come to fruition and expand and to grow. But thus far, 5 days in, it's a two-man show.
It's like you guys are, you know, graduated from being young lions to a main roster in New Japan or something.
Yeah. You know, it's like Way would have been, Hirai Kawato, and, perhaps I'm just, Kitamura with my chops, perhaps that's the, and this is our, we just finished our excursion and we've come back home.
So final few questions on this, and we'll go ahead and do a little bit of UFC this weekend, and this actually is a good segue because I'm a pro and I've done this before, is how something that we've talked about a lot with our group, admin Tony, Joe, our editor, one of our editors, and then myself, is how we cover MMA. And it is something, as you've known as a longtime subscriber, is that obviously you have had a foot in both worlds forever. But the majority of your content so far is wrestling related, and that's really what you and Way are known for. And I think that's what obviously is causing a lot of the buzz, is because you guys have built it so much goodwill over the years. The name of the show was Live Audio Wrestling. The stuff you did was Raw, SmackDown, pay-per-views, and the retro stuff and everything like that. And, you know, I don't know if it's been just this year, because it's kind of felt like it's been a down year for the sport, or if it's other things, but... You know, we've definitely in our day-to-day, we definitely ramp back on the amount of MMA we cover. We don't do all the Bellator shows like we used to. We cover all the UFC shows, but the page views are definitely down. And, you know, it's how we cover certain stories and all this stuff. You know, Dave still kind of does his thing, but as far as how the rest of us go about, it's a little bit different. So I'm kind of curious how do you plan on covering MMA with the new site, or is that going to have any presence at all?
Yeah, there'll definitely be MMA presence on the site. I'll be honest, I haven't really figured out how I'm going to go about that, because the initial idea was that we'll launch this site and it's going to be heavily wrestling. And then MMA is something that maybe I'll do outside of this. Maybe I'm going to do it somewhere else. And at the moment, like, that's not even realistic to me, given like the time I'm putting into this site and just the day-to-day stuff that we're doing. It doesn't leave for a whole lot of free time on top of that. So, I mean, in a perfect world, I would love for it to be sustainable, that we can do everything in-house here, MMA included. I've been kind of shocked by the amount of people that have reached out asking, are you bringing back the MMA report? Are you going to be doing more MMA on the site? Because typically, I always just looked at like our lineup of shows, and the MMA report was, it was just a show I started because there was an opportunity to do it on a radio station up here in Toronto, and it was kind of a side thing. And then I was able to incorporate it into the Law site, and like I realized it wasn't going to be the number one show on the site, but it was one that I did for 5 years that was able to grow an audience with it. And I've heard from a lot of those people since I stopped that show as well in October. So, I mean, if it can make sense for me to do everything in house here, that would be my wish. But we haven't really assessed. I think that there's going to be MMA news in terms of like a weekly show. I don't know. I'm also curious what the demand is for that. I mean, you just citing kind of where interest is right now. I think with MMA, what we're seeing, and whether this is a continuing trend or if it's just an aberration, is that it's going to have peak interest several times a year. And then there's going to be a lot of your rank and file shows that your loyal audience is going to follow. And that brings about the question, how many people out there that maybe they watch their 5 to 6 pay-per-views a year, but they still consider themselves fans of the sport that want to keep up, but 6 hours every Saturday is too daunting, that maybe there's that desire and demand for sites like the Wrestling Observer or Post Wrestling to be doing that kind of MMA content. So those people can still keep up to date, whether it be through podcasts or news, and then just watch their several pay-per-views a year. I don't know. I don't know the answer.
Yeah. I think like everyone, I'm fascinated to see where this TV deal ends out. This year ahead Dana White saying that last year, or this year has been the most successful year in history. When he says it, it just doesn't resonate. And most people know most of the stuff that he says now is kind of BS, which is a complete change with the trust factor with him from, you know, so many years ago, which when he said what he said, obviously there was promoter speak involved, but you generally tend to believe for the most part what he was saying was legit, or there was truth behind it. Now you kind of hear him, granted that he's including this Mayweather McGregor number in there, which obviously did a monster number, but if you take that out, I don't think there's any way in hell that this year has done the best, or even among the best business wise. Just there's been some high water marks, but there's just been a lot of just like blah, you know, just without really any McGregor fight or Rousey fight outside the boxing fight with Mayweather. And then you go in this next year with so much uncertainty. And then today, being Thursday, Dana White saying that, you know, talking about, basically going on this thing against GSP again, and just talking about how, you know, there's no chance he's going to fight McGregor next. And, you know, McGregor, it's crazy for people to criticize them, the promotion, for not stripping him, and, you know, just all the, it comes off so tone deaf, in that there's not really a big rallying point behind any part of the UFC right now, if that makes any sense. Like, GSP came back. I think that was a nice, huge positive. He's out, and now, you know, Dana's trying to pour water all over that. Connor, we have no idea if he'll ever come back. And there's not a lot of rallying points to get behind the business about. They aren't open the owners still don't talk to anyone. It seems as clouded as ever. We have guys that won't fight each other now. There's just, I think that 2017 really took a toll on the business. I think all of us that cover this, talk about this, and have decisions like you make and like we make, kind of have to figure out, okay, where's this thing going? You know, it's really fascinating. I can't, I, I am very intrigued where 2018 goes. I'm not seeing a huge amount of bright spots. It's all of a sudden going to see the business surge ahead again, as of this point anyway.
Well, certainly. And I mean, even when you look at this year's financial success, I mean, it's, you're right, like a Mayweather McGregor, that's probably, I mean, I was going to say once in a generation kind of fight, but that's also, I mean, with Showtime, they got two out of them with the Pacquiao fight prior. However, I mean, it's really tough to look at 2018 and be able to earmark a fight like that. Certainly Conor McGregor is your best opportunity for those big peak moments of the year, but that comes with some uncertainty. John Jones, enormous uncertainty. Ditto for George St. Pierre. And maybe the most uncertain of all is Ronda Rousey, that I don't think anyone's holding their breath to fight in 2018. So when you take all those, and there's always the opportunity that star that you don't see coming really clicks in a big way, that's somewhat been the calling card for the UFC, that there have been those people that have just emerged and been able to transfer themselves into legitimate box office attractions, which there's going to be, they're few and far between in the new year as well. When you look at the overall morale in the UFC, and it's not hidden and it's very public, the disdain that a lot of the fighters have for the pay situation, for where they are, what the detriment has been in trying to put together these several big fights a year that have done damage to just these fighters that are trying to move towards title fights. It's messed up that kind of linear system that is in place, which there's a trade-off to how much money you can make. But it really goes back to the sale. That sale, and with that number that came out, you saw a lot of fighters suddenly realize, wow, this is what this company was worth, and why is my take-home amount this low? And you're going to get another wave of that when the TV deal goes through. And both of us know that these fighters are not getting together to demand that they get a percentage of that TV deal. That's just not happening. And you're going to have another massive deal where fighters are going to see a huge amount guaranteed to the UFC over multiple years. And unlike the NBA and unlike unionized sports, they're not going to have any piece of that television contract.
Mm, very true. Does this mean also
– what a dismal picture I just painted.
I know. We still have to talk about a little bit about this weekend's show. So brighten up, everyone. We'll get to it. Does that mean you're not going to be doing a prediction show with Ariel Helwani this year? Are you going to figure out some way to make that happen?
Well, Ariel Helwani is always a difficult person to lock down, but my people and his people, they have been behind locked doors for weeks now. So hopefully we'll have a resolution about a show that I think the people want.
Interesting. Give the people what they want and give the people what they need. That is always a good motto to have. So let's talk about a little bit about this weekend's show. Obviously, you've been very busy, so we'll not go super in depth. But as you look ahead, actually, this is a good litmus test. So you've been working your ass off getting this site launched and all this stuff, and you have this big UFC pay per view closing out the year, somewhat big, I guess you could say. You also have a young one, as you mentioned, at home, and all this stuff going on. So what really stands out to you as must see for this card, and what are you most interested in? Well, I guess when early Monday morning or early Sunday morning hits, what questions do you want answered coming out of this weekend's pay-per-view?
Well, I think it's a really attractive, in particular, pay-per-view card. I think that there's a lot of great fights on this show. And yeah, I've definitely kind of had my head elsewhere this week, but I just think that it's like you have to go back to the Rashad Evans Thiago Silva card, which was January 2011, I would say, in terms of a post Christmas pay-per-view card that's had as little interest as this one has. I think that it's just a card that I think a viable main event. I think this is the toughest opponent of Chris Cyborg's career. I'd put Holly Holm above Marlos Kuhn in that sense. I think it's an important fight for both women. So I'm intrigued by that. I'm really intrigued by Khabib Nurmagomedov and Edson Barboza. Carlos Condit coming back, that presents some interesting questions. I don't know if Neil Magny is the most attractive opponent for him, but it's a good fight. And Cynthia Calvillo has had a great year. She's quietly won three fights this year. So there's a number of great stories, but the overall momentum for this show is severely lacking to me. But the X factor is Chris Cyborg, who's never been in a position to carry a pay-per-view, which she's doing alongside Holly Holm, who has a history of doing some big numbers, but not as the person anchoring that fight, as somewhat being the B-side of that fight, with the exception of that Fox card that did very well with herself and Valentina Shevchenko. So, I mean, perhaps when I'm thinking of how this does on pay-per-view, I'm looking low, but if it kind of does above what I'm expecting, which is the low 200s, I think that credit goes to Holly Holm and Chris Cyborg if it connects with people. And when that fight was announced, I thought by fight week, I thought when we were talking here the Thursday before the card, it would feel like a bigger fight. This would be one that maybe some non-traditional outlets would really gravitate towards. Two women headlining a pay-per-view, two of the best female fighters in the division. Well, I should say in the promotion, because saying in the division is kind of a low praise for the women's featherweight class. But it's a really good fight. And I'm kind of amazed that Holly Holm is this much of an underdog, because I think this is a very winnable fight for Holly Holm.
So yeah, and looking over the show, and this was one that definitely was hurt by Dominic Cruz falling through. Obviously, he was going to fight Jimmy Rivera. Kamaru Usman, who's really this welterweight that's on the rise, and his fight with Emil Meek actually got delayed, and it's happening a few weeks later in Boston, of all places, UFC 220. Looking forward to that. So yeah, I think that, you know, when it comes to – I was talking about this with somebody on Twitter earlier this month about – kind of what role the supporting fights on the show play, especially with the pay-per-view. And I think it means a lot. You have when it comes to decision-making, you know, if someone's like, this main event's okay, you know, I'm kind of interested, but it's not enough to get me alone to pay, you know, $65. So what else is on this main card? And I think that makes a huge difference. If you're like, all right, there's some intrigue here. I know this guy, I know this girl. I think this is good. I'm really interested when this happens. All right. Four out of five on the main card seem pretty good. I'm going to go ahead and buy this. And I think with this show, you know, you have the Cyborg Holm fight, which is interesting for a lot of reasons, but I don't think it's enough to drive a huge buy rate on its own. You have an excellent co-main event in Khabib Nurmagomedov versus Edson Barboza. Classic co-main event territory, probably not, but I think maybe in this era, and given the fact that they just did 11 shows in 11 weeks, I think this is probably as good as we're going to get. You know, I think most like this would be, that seems to be like a fight that is perfect for like a FS1 five round main event or something like that. You go down the card, the main card, Dan Hooker against Mark Diakisi, not a marquee fight at all. Should be fun, but you know, we'll see where that goes. You mentioned, Cynthia Calvillo already against Carlos Esparza. You know, Calvillo, is someone that Dana White loves a lot. And then also Carlos Condit, of all people, coming back and opening up the pay-per-view. And then you have some interesting, you know, prospects in the prelims. Miles Jury is a guy that's kind of been on the shelf and not really in the flow of things for a while here, but he looked great at his return or his debut at featherweight earlier this year, fighting against Rick Glenn, who's a really tough guy. Khalil Roundtree has some power at light heavyweight, but that's there's little bits of intrigue, but there's just not a lot of meat to me on this this main card. It could be a great night, you know, great finishes, fun fights, all this stuff, but it just, I think when you have like a Dominic Cruz, Jimmy Rivera fight fall through and you have some of these other things come through, it definitely takes a little bit of that air out of the night as a whole.
Yeah, it's kind of a pattern you've seen. Like you had the huge 217 card that was obviously a blockbuster, but then you fast forward to 218 a few weeks later. Again, great action fights. I think typically you order a UFC pay-per-view, it's unlikely it's going to be a terrible show. They had a few at the beginning of the year. I'm thinking of, Holly Holm and Jermaine Durandamy. Yeah, the Brooklyn card. You know, but those are rare. Those are pretty rare cards that you have that I have no doubt that this show on Saturday, probably by the end of it, you'll be pretty happy by spending your money on this card. I would be very surprised if this is a bad card, but you just look at the interest level and it just feels very, very low for this card. And also, I mean, right before Khabib Nurmagomedov, missed out on the fight with Tony Ferguson. I mean, that was an interesting discussion point going into that week, was what kind of an audience is Khabib Nurmagomedov going to bring to the pay-per-view? And is there going to be a strong Russian fan base that's going to prop up his numbers? So I'm glad Nurmagomedov is back, and I think Edson Barboza is a great fight for him. So some very good fights on this card, I will say.
Yeah. So before we let you go, we're a couple of days away from the year end, and obviously we talked a lot about your project and post wrestling and that, and kind of what's ahead. And I think people can kind of figure out what's going on there and what your goals are with that. But as you look back at this year 2017, both personally, professionally, and for the businesses that you cover, what's going to be some of your biggest memories?
In terms of the big stories this year, I mean, I think most people are going to go back to Mayweather and McGregor, and just the fact it happened. I think that's stunning. The fact that it actually did happen, because I was as pessimistic as anyone when that fight began, and I gave it no credence. And then when it started to take form, you realize that this fight not only was going to take place, but it was going to be bigger than anyone imagined. I think by the time that night hit, people realized what a monster this was, but it was business changing. It was business changing. It was industry changing in many ways for the UFC's business, with Conor McGregor ascending to a level like that. And how, I mean, every one of us looked at this going in, that how does this guy go back to the UFC after a night like this, after a promotion like this, and after a payoff like this? And that's currently the dilemma they're in, that they're going to have to hand over a lot on the negotiating table to get this guy back. So just the ripple effect that entire promotion and fight had, I think, has to be your story of the year. Looking specifically to professional wrestling, I think so much is just what's on the table for 2018. You have the television deals for the WWE. You have Alpha Entertainment, which no matter what Alpha Entertainment becomes, it's going to be a major story for 2018. So on the wrestling side, I'm much more looking into the future rather than to the past 12 months in terms of what the big stories are, because 2018 is going to have significant stories that are going to have a large effect for the years to come, specific to the WWE's core business. But also, I mean, it's another year for Impact, where, I mean, where are they going to be a year from now? How is this? Do they have a way to turn this thing around? That's a continual question year after year for Impact. For Lucha Underground, they're in a spot where many, many questions surrounding them. So New Japan and their continual expansion, how Cody and the Elites, this 10,000 seat show that they're hoping to push, how big of a thing can that become? Where is the industry a year from now, where are kind of dovetailing off of our whole discussion about the media, that wrestlers are going directly to the consumers, to the fan base? I mean, I think that's something fascinating to watch. And if there's anyone at the forefront of that, it's Cody Rhodes, it's the Young Bucks, it's Kenny Omega, that certainly are propped up by having the affiliations to a New Japan or a Ring of Honor. But it's what Chris Jericho's going through right now. This is a guy that he is running his own podcast network. He is running his own crews. He is in charge of all elements of his career at the moment. And it's very gratifying when you're able to have that kind of success and be able to manage your own, set your own terms.
Yeah. I think I echo all those sentiments. I'm interested to see what happens with the Daniel Bryan situation. I think to get
sure.
some,
another some, huge one,
huge one. Yeah. Finally get some resolution on that. But I think, again, yeah, going off the conversation we had earlier about personalities, I think, you know, I think this is going to be this is going to be the year that we're going to see who, like, it's a continued fight for literally telling people saying, take my attention. Right. And not only, and I was talking about this with some other people before, is that, you know, it's not just about I am a WWE fan and WWE can give me content. This is the only thing I'm interested in. This the average person has so much more available to them. Imagine in the 90s, instead of having to get VHS tapes, you could, someone told you back then, look, you can have access to the best WWE stuff, best WCW stuff, everything you could ever want from those two promotions, plus all these promotions you never got to see before, and the best of the indie talent, best of Japanese, all the stuff in the palm of your hand, on your computer, on your laptop, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. You'd be like, my God, this is heaven. The world's exploded. We've all gone to heaven. This is incredible. But now it's a fight for eyeballs and attention. And I think you mentioned Chris Jericho. I think he's doing a good job at 40-some-odd years old. I mean, the fact that he's still doing this, or almost 50, whatever he is now. I mean, that's incredible at this stage. I think it is everyone competing against everyone when it comes for your earbuds and when it comes for your eyeballs. And I think WWE is going to continue to have to try to find interesting ways to get people to watch their product. I think this year was some of the interesting pairings they did. I think there was no – the one that's coming to mind is a huge indicator of that is Survivor Series, when they went from Brock versus Jinder to Brock versus AJ Styles within like a couple weeks. And that was – it just kind of for that moment in time, everyone's like, this is a amazing matchup. It was a fun matchup going in, fun matchup going out of it. But they were like, we're going to make this change on the fly because we think this is going to get the most attention now. Wasn't a tremendous build. I think a lot of people would rather seen as a Mania match or one of the big four matches or something along those lines. But I think it is people constantly and groups trying, and this is just all over the world. Everyone's going to be trying to get everyone's attention away from everything, and it's going to become tougher and tougher and tougher to do. And I think the ones that do it better than anyone else are going to rise up and truly become stars. You know, I think this conversation we hear all the time, Dave and Brian talk about it. Everyone talks about it. How are you going to create stars? UFC, WWE, all over the place. Ultimately, the people decide who the stars are. And I think the people that are the guys and the girls that are going to say, we're going to give you a reason to pay attention to us. I think those are going to be the people that are really going to just not just be superstars, but to be, I mean, who would have ever thought at the end of 2017, we'd be talking about Cody Rhodes as a legit like star when it comes to, he's been able to draw outside. And obviously the Young Bucks Association has helped, but the fact that Cody Rhodes, a guy that was saddled with that Stardust gimmick and just looked dead on arrival, went out there and is making a really tremendous living and is a buzzworthy talent. That's tremendous at the end of 2017. And there's other guys out there that can do that too. So I'm really fascinated to see how that turns out. That was one of my big revelations this year, is that, you know, it is the guys and girls that are figuring it out are so far ahead of the curve of everyone else. It's not even funny. It's going to be amazing to watch who goes next. And I think Daniel Bryan could be that guy.
Yeah. And you bring up a great point. It's that, the amount of content that's out there, it's an unlimited supply of content. And the one aspect to the audience, something that is limited, is their time. And that's the most valuable commodity to fans, is just what is worthy of their time, because they are inundated with options and how they're going to spend that time on your product. So you better have something that is at a level that is worthy of their time, or something so different that there's that curiosity to follow something. And not every promotion is going to be able to live up to that with their audience, who has never had more options.
Well, perfect segue into throwing the microphone to you to do your best plug possible for Post Wrestling. Tell people why they should support you and check you out. Cover you guys, take care of you guys on Patreon. The floor is yours, John Pollock. Go for it.
Well, the new site that we've been talking about, it is postwrestling.com. That is where you can go and get all of our free shows, our news that is being updated daily. And we're going to be doing all of our regular free shows, reviews of Raw, reviews of SmackDown. That will also include reviews of Sunday night shows and other ideas that we are currently coming up with. And then if you want to go the step further, we have launched the Post Wrestling Cafe at patreon.com/postwrestling. And there you can sign up. At minimum, you're going to be getting one bonus show per week. That includes our Rewind Away shows that are bi-weekly. And just to get a sample of what's coming up, this coming Sunday, we'll have our Best of 2017 show with Dan Lavransky, Jason Agnew, myself, and Wei Ting. Next week, we're going to have a full primer for those that are going to be watching Wrestle Kingdom to get you all caught up to speed. If you have never watched New Japan, if you haven't watched in a few months, we'll get you set for that. And then next week, we'll also, for our Patreon subscribers, have a full rundown of Wrestle Kingdom coming out next Friday. As well, we mentioned the Worst of Show, which was one of our most popular shows at the Law. That will be out a week from Sunday. So postwrestling.com and patreon.com/postwrestling are your go-to places.
Well, John, I would say good luck, but as CM Punk said, luck is for losers. And I think you guys are going to do great. You already are doing great now. I have no doubts. You're going to have continued success. The fact you've been able to do attract this much attention, this much goodwill in just a few days' time, and goodwill being people's credit cards being put down, I think that's a great sign, and I think you guys are going to do awesome. And we're looking forward to talking to you, you know, a year from now. And again, as you'll be flying the post wrestling helicopter and private jet around to all over the place. Oh, before I forget, WrestleMania weekend, you guys have a big announcement about that in the Christmas show, yeah?
Yes, myself and Wei Ting, we are going to be hosting the live podcast at Wale Mania, which is happening the Thursday of WrestleMania week in New Orleans. So you can meet us there at Wale Mania if you are down in New Orleans. It's always fun to meet up with listeners in person. So yeah, that's going to be a lot of fun, WrestleMania week. And a big thank you to all of the people that have reached out to us over the last few months, whether it be on this site or otherwise. And we appreciate it very much. We heard from many, many people, more than we assumed, were listening to us. So just want to say thank you.
Yeah. And again, to get back my praise, you guys are going to do great. And I'm proud of you guys taking the chance. Most people would be like, okay, it was a fun run. We're going to go back and, you know, go into the corporate world and maybe do this as a hobby. But you guys are trying it. And I think that's very admirable. And you guys are going to be an inspiration for a lot of other podcasters and content creators down the road. John Pollock, best of luck. Again, luck is for losers. John Pollock, you guys are going to do great. Thanks so much for returning, and have a happy new year.
Same to you, Josh.
All right, big thanks to John Pollock for stopping by and talking all about post-wrestling. Support your local paid content wrestling provider, content provider. Start with us and then go with everyone else. Just kidding. But, you know, thank you for supporting our website. And obviously we and others have a lot to do with making sure that you guys are getting value. And, you know, with John going on his own, I'm sure others are going to do the same as well. You know, we just need to make sure everyone's, you know, we're doing the best that we can. So certainly you guys speak with your dollars. You're going to let us know. Thankfully, this year has been really good for us as always, but we don't want to take that for granted. So, you know, we hope that John and Wei do great in their new endeavor, and looking forward to talking with them in the year ahead and seeing how they're progressing. Let's see. With all that being said, I think we're going to let you guys go. So have a great New Year's Eve. Don't drive drunk. Call an Uber, cab, all that stuff. Just do the inconvenient thing and get a ride home without driving drunk on New Year's Eve and really any day or night for that matter. And looking forward to big stuff in 2018 ahead. We have, again, a couple of MMA year in review shows left to go, and also some other stuff as well, becoming putting on the back burner. That's time to put to the front burner and get ready to serve to all you guys. So hopefully it'll be a fun January and February, and looking forward to UFC in Boston coming up, all kinds of exciting stuff. So hopefully 2018 is a better MMA year for us than 2017 was. So big thanks to John Pollock. Big thanks to all of you. A lot of choice in your podcasting day. So happy you stopped by my house, so to speak, for an hour. And then this has been Josh Nason's Punch Out for 2017. Until next year and until next time, insert catchphrase here. Happy New Year.